making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
In the years following the Second World War, two basic patterns began to influence the growing science of space travel. Rockets or guided missiles grew larger and larger. Atomic power plants grew smaller and smaller, compact enough to be contained in a submarine. Finally, in a rocket.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the B-side of the 188th episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And it's Friday, October 8th, 2010. And as we do sometimes, we come into the studio a little early on Friday mornings to record these B-side episodes when we know there's no way we're going to be able to cram in all the insane happenings going on around the shell game world. That track was called Super Rocket Rumble from Man or Astro Man from their EP Deluxe Men in Space. And we're going to touch on some Deluxe Men in Space. And on this episode, we're basically going to cover my sister sites, foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com. And we'll glance at the breaking news again on this October 8th, 2010. China outraged over Nobel Peace Prize selection. Jim Jones to step down as National Security Advisor. And the U.S. economy lost 95,000 jobs in September. All of those stories we will touch on the main episode 189 coming up in just a little bit. But first, let's have a mention and a hat tip and a huge thanks and congratulations for the 150th episode from my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, How to Defeat the New World Order, marking the milestone by soliciting listener participation on the question, How to Defeat the New World Order. And so this episode contains voicemail messages, YouTube videos, email ideas, all again on this topic of ways that we can defeat this system. You can call it the New World Order if you want. Now, tied in with this is a great new interview with James Corbett and Jan Irvin of GnosticMedia.com. Paul Verge of Divergent Films and Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyandHope.com and PeaceRevolution.org. Jan and Richard have both served that interview out through their respective podcast feeds, thereby reaching tons and tons and tons more folks. And again, I'm always just kind of blessed to be associated with all these great folks who only help kind of bring me up. The latest Sunday update from Korber Report for this past Sunday, October 3rd, Exploding Skeptics, The Secret War, and Good News. So again, my friends, if you are not a listener of KorberReport.com, I highly recommend that you be. However, more and more time goes by, and that's how folks have found me through our show, NewWorldNextWeek.com. Someone else that I'm happy to be associated with is my man Clyde Lewis from right here in Portland, Oregon, GroundZeroMedia.org. Of course, his live show every Sunday night on KUFO here in Portland, 101.1 FM, simulcast live worldwide by ZeroPointRadio.com. Last Sunday's episode, The Event and the Path of Least Resistance. We're seeing a trend in so-called alien disclosure that seems to waffle between a comfortable and determined truth and an uncomfortable lie that needs to be corrected. In a world craving transcendence, it can be easy to place a spiritual experience in the same realm as the alien intrusion or intervention. Aliens are far more tangible as gods than the Judeo-Christian Muslim god that's defined by his professed absence. No major spiritual experience or event has happened in the Judeo-Christian Muslim world for hundreds of years. Clyde believes this is about to change, and something tells him it shouldn't be trusted. And we touch on this topic, and it's something we get into on MediaMonarchy.com as well as Cyberspace War. Something is definitely going on. Is this all just an allegory, as we saw in the 50s with monster movies, all being about the commies? Are these just our allegories about the terrorists? Something definitely strange is afoot at Circle K, if you will. So included in this posting of the latest episode from Clyde Lewis and GroundZeroMedia.org, we do have an article and a post from Cryptogon.com asking the question, has there ever been this much alien entertainment at once? The Event is on NBC. V starts up again in November on ABC. Skyline, a new movie coming out in November. Battle Los Angeles coming out next year. Two alien prequels in the works. Earth Defense Force. Sam Raimi, still within the alien universe. And also movies that I've never heard of in production called I Am Number 4, The Forever War, Heaven's Shadow, and also posted up is an interview with a guy named Larry Lowe talking about this viral disclosure and what the connections to, of course, the military media industrial complex are. So that takes us quite well to all the latest on cyberspacewar.com, and we'll start with the post of headlines under spooks, sat-nav, and sightings. And we'll kick it off with an article from the Christian Science Monitor, where the Pentagon says the global cyber war is just beginning. The Pentagon is rapidly preparing for cyber war in the face of alarming and growing threats, say senior defense officials, who add that sophisticated attacks have prompted them to take the striking step of investigating the feasibility of expanding NATO's collective defense tenet to include cyberspace. But as such planning intensifies, the military is struggling with some basics of warfare, including how to define exactly what, for starters, constitutes an attack, and what level of cyber attack warrants a cyber reprisal. Now, of course, they start to quote William Lynn, and listeners will recall in recent weeks we noted his article, again talking about the coming cyberspace war, as we've noted on this show since the beginning of cyberspace war over the last year and a half now, that there will be some type of catalyzing, catastrophic event to shove a sort of I Patriot Act down our throats, an I-9-11, which will bring us new controls, new licensing, new tiered level Internet 2, if you will. And just like all our misleaders anxiously await the next terror attack, these guys are anxiously awaiting an I-9/11, so they can shove down the ideas they've already got written down our throats. If we move to Danger Room, military spooks step up war on leakers. On Monday, the Army issued what it billed as a major revision to its regulation about turning in snitches. Of course, thanks to Secrecy News, FAS.org, for catching the change. Mostly, it informed soldiers how to stay alert against the ever-present threat of espionage, sabotage, subversion, and international terrorism that the Army faces and creates. But then Regulation 381-12 instructs Army personnel to rat out, quote, known or suspected unauthorized disclosure of classified information to those not authorized to have knowledge of it, including leaks to the media, end quote. Again, these are the amazing bits of hope and change, such as Obama administration pressuring ISPs to censor websites. The Obama administration IP czar, Victoria Espinel, has been holding meetings with ISPs, registrars, payment processors, and others in a bid to get them to block access to websites dedicated to infringing activities. However, as has been documented before, and this is an article from Paul Joseph Watson, the government deems such infringement to include political opinions which are antagonistic towards the state, leaving the door open for state censorship of free speech on the worldwide wiretap. Espinel, the White House's intellectual property enforcement coordinator, aims to create a special relationship between the government and internet companies in order to, quote, harmonize the efforts of law enforcement at the federal, state, and local levels and strengthen cooperation with the private sector, as if there is some type of difference between those two things. Microsoft wants government licensing net access. And again, we can take this from Paul Joseph Watson. And we get into articles sourcing back to ZDNet. But it's all about the levels. It's all about the controls. And it's all about using ideas which sound decent on their face. And I'm not saying this even does. But they sell you these ideas under the guise of actually being good for you. And you can scan down that article and see exactly their reasoning of why they want to do this. It's all about protecting you from malware. A writer on AOL has been keeping tabs on Alex Jones and the latest work from Infowars.com, and something they've been doing for the past several months is on certain days basically giving key phrases for everybody to go Google, which essentially games the Google Trends, and we can get those words to be on the top of Google Trends every single day. So this guy writing for AOL says that InfoWars is whipping the internet into a frenzy of anxiety, as if bringing people the real context and subtext as best as any of us are able to do, that's really what's feeding the frenzy of anxiety. Pay no attention to all those smaller, crazy alternative media outlets. You need to go and stick with the source, with the professionals that you can trust. Iran says it's captured Western spies involved in nuclear cyber attack. More on that from DailyTech.com, and we will get into a little bit more on Stuxnet, which we did go over last week. Of course, just coincidentally going on with the same time that the West is running Cyberstorm 3, a drill about malware attacking computer systems. Researchers using rat-robot hybrid to design better brain-machine interfaces. More on that from IEEE.org. UK man dies after his GPS sat-nav device sends him into a reservoir. And it's happened again. We can take this story from 3news.co.nz out of New Zealand, but it's about China. UFO forces airport closure in China. Three flights into this Chinese city of Baotou, located in Inner Mongolia, have been averted to avoid diverted to avoid a UFO. Described as flat and tubular, it reportedly hovered around 3 kilometers away before zooming in, circling the airport, and vanishing. To guarantee security, aircraft had to land at secondary airports, a spokeswoman said. Otherwise, it may have led to collision. Whatever you think about UFOs, these are serious national security and air safety issues involved, UK Ministry of Defense UFO researcher told The Sun. It's the latest in a string of UFO sightings in China, leading some to suspect the superpower is testing a new experimental aircraft of some kind. And when we noted this story a few months ago, there was a brief mention at the bottom that, oh yeah, there were some military tests going on nearby, but I'm sure that's not related at all. And our last note on this, October 7th, DEFCON, spooks, sat-nav, and sightings. We have the best image yet of a comet that is closing in on Earth. It's called the Hartley 2 comet. CBSNews.com has the photo, and they're tracking our imminent destruction. As we move on through cyberspacewar.com, we take this from Threat Level. Secret spilling sources at risk following Cryptome breach. Secret spilling site Cryptome, that's CRYPTOME.org, was hacked last weekend, possibly exposing the identities of whistleblowers and other confidential sources, according to a hacker who contacted Wired and claimed responsibility for the hack. The hacker said two intruders from the group Cryogenics, with a K, breached the long-running site where they gained access to a repository of secret files and correspondence. Among them, the hacker claimed, were the records of self-proclaimed WikiLeaks insiders who have been the source of several unconfirmed tips supposedly detailing internal WikiLeaks matters. Wired couldn't confirm the identity of the hacker, who asked to be identified as Ruxpin. To verify his claims, the hacker showed Wired screenshots of Cryptome founder John Young's Earthlink account inbox and Cryptome's directory. The latter showed two WikiLeaks file paths. The hacker also provided a list of about 30 names and email addresses of sources who communicated with Cryptome and the contents of one email exchange between Young and a Wired contributor back in 2008. The Wired contributor and John Young of Cryptome have authenticated that email. Now, the update to this goes to Cryptome.org, where John Young says that Wired is complicit in this federal criminal hack. In the correspondence, John Young is basically saying, you know, if this was a felonious activity, you're required to turn these people in. So the WikiLeaks Cryptome hacker cyberspace war, again, just keeps heating up more and more and more. And we have a little related note at the bottom from the Washington Post, where hacker infiltration ended very quickly some online voting tests going on in the District of Criminals. They were able to make it play the Michigan fight song, I believe. So, again, we always come back to that fundamental question. We can fight against all the different things going on, but ultimately, if our elections are fraudulent, what damn difference does it make? And I'm sure we're going to see more and more as we come up to a highly contentious election season here in the States. Our last piece on cyberspacewar.com is, as I said, an update to the recent Stuxnet virus. And we touched on this last week in that it has been shown within the code to contain biblical references to Esther and Persia, and basically the Israelites pulling a preemptive strike on Persia. Persia now being known as Iran. Webster Tarpley coined the term virtual flag terrorism, like false flag terrorism, where you pull off an attack and act like your enemy did it. New clues point to Israel as author of Stuxnet. New clues released this week show a possible link between Israel and sophisticated malware targeting industrial control systems in critical infrastructure systems such as nuclear plants and oil pipelines. Late last Thursday, security firm Symantec released a detailed paper with analysis of the headline-making code, which reveals two clues in the Stuxnet malware that adds to speculation that Israel may have authored the code to target Iran, or they could simply be red herrings planted in the code by programmers to point suspicion at Israel and away from other possible suspects. A false flag, any way you cut it. This malware called Stuxnet appears to be the first to effectively attack critical infrastructure and in a manner that produces physical results, although there's no proof yet of any real-world damage that's been done by it. The malware's sophistication and infection of thousands of machines in Iran has led some to speculate that the U.S. or Israeli government built the code to take out Iran's nuclear program. So, my friends, this will close out our cyberspace war update. So let's take a clip, and again, as we continue to try and just dive into virtual flag terrorism and possibly Israel being the author of Stuxnet.
There's a report out about a new computer virus that may be aimed at destroying a bricks and mortar facility. The virus is called Stuxnet, and according to the Financial Times, it may be aimed at Iran's controversial nuclear facility. Joining us now is Richard Falkenrath. He is principal of the Chertoff Group and a Bloomberg contributing editor. He has also been a White House advisor on security. Richard, thanks so much for being with us this morning. First of all, how does this virus work?
So this virus attacks the SCADA systems for industrial facilities, and that means supervisory data and control systems. What it does is it originally started with a USB drive. Someone would take an infected USB drive, stick it into a computer, and then it propagates through the system. It's a worm, which means it propagates by itself. It keeps moving through the system, and it hides its tracks.
But, Richard, I mean, does it have to be placed there? It seems like it does.
We think it started with a USB drive that was physically connected to one of the machines, and then it went itself through the network. And the techie people who analyze this think this is one of the most sophisticated pieces of malware they've ever seen. And the reason for that is it's using stolen certificates, the legitimate digital certificates that real companies use to identify themselves when they communicate. They were stolen. And then it exploits four previously unknown vulnerabilities in the Windows operating system. These are called day zero vulnerabilities. And the theory is, among the security experts, is that this took the resources of a nation state to create a piece of malware this sophisticated.
Well, Richard, I was going to ask you about that because I'm reading this article as well. I read it said, well-financed, highly organized team had to put it together. What are the chances that the U.S. created it? And I'm asking you that because it seems like Iran has the most infections out there.
That's right. Iran has by far the most infections, followed by India and Indonesia. And it is theoretically possible that the U.S. government did this, but in my judgment, it's a very remote possibility. More likely, frankly, is Israel, that Israel did it. It's not impossible that some group of hackers did it, but the security experts that are studying this really think this required the resources of a nation state. For the U.S. government to launch a piece of malware like this against industrial systems, a very risky thing to do because it can't really be controlled. It can spread beyond the place that's being targeted.
But I want to ask you, I mean, do countries, I mean, we're talking about Iran in this context of its controversial nuclear site, but is Iran really running its nuclear power, its nuclear plan on Windows software?
Well, yeah, the main power plant there uses Windows PCs with a Siemens-provided industrial control software package, and that in the diagnostics is how this virus got into it, and that's an increasingly common configuration.
It also seems of increasing concern because, I don't know, I've used Windows, I know other people who have, and it's not stable even without a virus sometimes, so, I mean, should a nuclear system really be hinged on that kind of software?
Well, that is the nature of the modern economy and our technology. We rely heavily on these IT systems. In this case, the virus exploited four vulnerabilities that the Windows manufacturers did not know about. Two of them have now been closed, but there's two that they're still working on and then are going to close soon. And that's why it's so important to always stay up with your software patches that come along.
So, Richard, I mean, just getting back to what you said about you think that Israel did it, I mean, I'm going to guess that they will never admit it, even if they did.
And I wouldn't say I think that Israel did it. I'd say it's more likely than that the U.S. did it. This is almost impossible to figure out. The forensics of tracing this back, trying to determine who launches these things originally, is extremely difficult. So this is really pure conjecture on who did it. I do know something, though, about how the U.S. government makes its decisions on whether to launch what we call an offensive information warfare attack, which this would be. Okay. And the bar is quite high.
All right, Richard. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Richard Falkenrath, contributing editor here at Bloomberg and principal at the Chertoff Group.
Now, of course, that's always interesting with the experts and the talking heads that the news shows have on. It's like, oh, well, let's just have an independent expert who happens to be connected to Chertoff and Bloomberg. And I'm sure there's some Council on Foreign Relations connections in there as well. So there you have our latest updates on the Stuxnet virus and the possible false flag fingers that point to Israel. Many false flag fingers pointing towards Israel as time goes by, and we're going to see more on that in the upcoming episode 189. So again, all of those things are available on cyberspacewar.com, and as always, I implore you to go do more research for yourself. And again, come back and tell me. You can send me news tips, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Now, having said all that, let's switch to foodworldorder.com, one of the other sites in the Media Monarchy umbrella, where we're first going to go down the October 7th Binge and Purge Sick Soda Studies. And first, from foodpoisonjournal.com, study reveals 63% of restaurant workers handle food while sick. So the pop quiz question: what's the easiest way to ensure a food service establishment ends up embroiled in a foodborne illness outbreak? The answer is fail to implement a sick leave policy and allow food handlers to work while sick. Not a very surprising answer, right? Despite the well-documented association between foodborne illness outbreaks and ill food handlers, it seems that many restaurant managers are willing to take the risk anyway. A study released by the Restaurant Opportunities Center United Group, ROC, entitled Serving While Sick, found that 4,323 workers, or 63% of those surveyed, admitted to cooking or serving food while sick at some point during the past year. Included in this are stories backing it up from the News Herald. And we've seen so much more as we see the food safety battle heating up, with Senate Bill 510 looming in the background, the Food Safety Modernization Act. And we see a lot of stories about how dirty restaurants are and how bad they are, and we need more controls on them. The flip side of that is a lot of kitchens in restaurants are probably cleaner than your home. If you've ever worked in a restaurant and had the closing shift, you know that you pretty much scrub and bleach and wash everything down every night, and you can't go home until you do. Moving along, but right here in my backyard in the Pacific Northwest, we take it from the Hillsboro Argus, connected to the Oregonian, connected to OregonLive.com, the politics of food in the Northwest. Slow roasting, lively debates about land use issues, taking turns being on the hot seat. An unscheduled political debate for state governor? No. Just the fifth gathering of the North Coast Slow Food Convivium, which ventured inland to Gales Meadow Farm this past Sunday afternoon. Event attracted over 24 people, including small farmers from Nehalem and Astoria, to Portland chef Paul Loesch of the Pearl District's Vino Paradiso. Gales Meadow Farm, owned by Renee and Ann Berblinger since 1999, includes 9 flat acres, producing more than 300 varieties of vegetables and herbs. The philosophy of the Berblingers is that of the slow food movement, to promote food that is good, clean, and fair. And if it's local, that's even better. The politics of food in the Pacific Northwest is something we're going to touch on more, as we do have, and I can now confirm for you here, that we're going to be having a conversation with Barbara Peterson of FarmWars.info coming up next week. Look for that cross-posted on MediaMonarchy.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. Moving right along from the Associated Press, coffee prices on the rise as futures hit 13-year high. Coffee prices hit a 13-year high. Well, not last Wednesday. I see the story goes back to September. But as a huge coffee fan, it was something I didn't want to miss. Coffee prices hit a 13-year high, extending a rally that sent prices up about 43% in the past months. If you're putting together your prepper package and things you want to have, I would imagine coffee would be a very important one. Even if you're not a coffee fan, you still may want to stockpile some coffee, some tobacco, some whiskey. But if we move to the Daily Mail, scientists say a 3-course meal and a single stick of chewing gum is now a possibility. So it didn't work out that well for poor Violet in Willy Wonka's factory, but now researchers say they may have cracked the secret behind creating a sweet that replicates 3 meals in a single stick of chewing gum. Scientists at the Institute of Food Research, IFR, say the latest tech could be used to turn Willy Wonka's eccentric invention into reality, but without the unpleasant side effects. Food scientist Dave Hart believes that recent advances in nanotech, which deals with structures just millionths of a millimeter in size, could capture and release flavors in a precisely controlled way. Now, this article goes on, and I'm not sure whether it's just replicating the flavors or if you would actually get the supposed nutrients of a three-course meal. New York State seeking a food stamp ban on soda as the USDA mulls proposal to fight obesity problem. Using food stamps to buy sodas, teas, sports drinks, and other sugar-sweetened beverages would not be allowed in New York City under a government effort to battle obesity. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor Patterson announced Thursday that they're seeking permission from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which administers the nation's food stamp program, to add sugary drinks to the list of prohibited goods for city residents receiving assistance. If approved, it would be the first time an item would be banned from the federal program based solely on nutritional value. Because you can get all the crappy white bread you want. Studies show drop in retail food prices at the supermarket. According to the latest American Farm Bureau Federation Market Basket Survey, retail food prices at the supermarket dipped slightly during the third quarter of 2010. Do you feel it where you shop? And our last note on the 10-7 binge and purge, six soda studies. United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization said in a statement that as many as 22 countries around the world could be in a food crisis given their current status. Reportedly, these 22 countries are all facing enormous challenges to simply keep the population well-nourished. The total population of the affected countries comes to approximately 166 million people. 166 million people that are starving all across the globe. And if you remember the stories we had about California annually throwing away enough food to fill 35 Staples centers. And you know, as we often reference here, the sort of Bill Hicks jokey idea that with the weapons of war that we're able to kill people with the push of a button, couldn't we feed those people? The answer is, of course, yes. It's just not in the interest of the Western finance oligarchs. So, speaking of prepping, we'll take this next one from Gizmodo.com. Costco selling an apocalyptic year's worth of disgusting food for $800. Either our nation's obesity problem is just as bad as they say, or Costco knows something we don't. Because the aircraft carrier-scaled big box store is now offering enough horrifying food to last you a year for a cool $800. The monstrous 5,011-serving package, courtesy of food outfitter Shelf Reliance, hey, at least we have to keep our senses of humor during doomsday, claims their end-of-days buffet contains only top-of-the-line products developed with everyday menu planning in mind, which makes sense, of course, because the only thing worse than knowing that the entire eastern seaboard's been leveled by nukes or a horde of flesh-feasting space titans is repetitive bunker fare. Dehydrated fish skin again, Mom? We can get more from boingboing.net, and you can go straight to the source on Costco.com, or you could get good storable food, non-GMO, organic food from eFoodsDirect.com. I'm not necessarily endorsing them, but if you're trying to put things together like that, yeah, you could buy a bunch of crap from Costco, or you could get it from Patriots who have been doing it for generations and who knows what's up. Finally, my friends, on this B-Side episode 188 from MediaMonarchy.com for October 8th, 2010, we're closing out on FoodWorldOrder.com with yet another story, and I have yet to add in the flashback links to where we can talk about some of the other Monsanto creatures that, of course, the Obama-Sia sees no problem with appointing to food positions. We've got Michael Taylor. We've got, what's the guy, Izzy? I forget his name. That's his nickname. I'll have to add in the flashback links. Coming from grist.org, Obama taps food industry exec for top ag research post. The long simmering debate about Obama's ag policy, whether it represents a new paradigm, agribusiness as usual, or some enigmatic combination, we now have a new data point to consider. Earlier this month, Congress approved Obama's nomination of Catherine Wateki. W-O-T-E-K-I, Catherine Wateki, the USDA's Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics. The appointment drew little attention in the press, including the sustainable food blogosphere. That's surprising because Wateki comes to her new position after a five-year stint as Global Director for Scientific Affairs for Mars Incorporated, the multinational junk food giant. In her new role, Wateki will direct the U.S. government's entire agricultural research budget. That means she's going to supervise a guy named Roger Beachy, head of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, who oversees the USDA's billion-dollar-a-year competitive grants program. Beachy is a genetic scientist with strong ties to genetically modified seed giant bastard Monsanto, and he's openly hostile to organic agriculture. At a time when U.S. farms desperately need to move towards more sustainable methods, federally supported agriculture research has fallen into the hands of a Monsanto man answering to a junk food executive. We have links for you to read about Roger Beachy and to read about the National Institute of Food and Agriculture and more on Catherine Wateki, and contained within this post, flashbacks to grist.org covering Obamasiah and his connections to the eugenics arm of this New World Order system, hiding away the real, giving us the fake, as they do on any number of levels, whether it's food or media or money. More change you can't believe in, my friends. And again, where's the outrage? We're trying to bring it here on foodworldorder.com. And again, more information can help you make better informed decisions about what you put down your gullet. And as I've always said, I'm no saint in these matters. But I'm learning all the time between, thankfully, my way smarter about food and health girlfriend, and fortunately my job. And again, being in a place like the Pacific Northwest, it could perhaps be a hell of a lot worse. And again, we'll remind you, we're going to have a conversation with Barbara Peterson of FarmWars.info coming up next week on MediaMonarchy.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. So there you have it, my friends. The latest blast of alternative news from Food World Order, Cyberspace War, Corbett Report, Ground Zero, all that and so much more. I appreciate you checking out these smaller, shorter, no-frills B-side episodes. And again, that's how we're going to learn and grow and share and get through what is obviously a paradigm shift. Which way it's shifting is going to be up to us. It's going to be up to us to incite a revelation. Because it's a war on consciousness. This has been the B-side episode of 188 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, reminding you, as always, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.